Welcome to In Season, where we explore the farms, gardens, and wild spaces of the Lower Columbia Pacific region. I am one of your hosts, Teresa Retzloff.
And I'm Jessica Schleif, and we're here to talk about gardens and things that are happening in the gardens.
In midsummer.
Yeah, midsummer gardens. Hi, Teresa.
Hi, Jessica.
Hi, Dylan.
Hi, Dylan. How are you? We were talking earlier about this summer, which is kind of an odd one, but then I feel like every summer is odd in its own way. So I have to tell you
something. Unique. We call that unique.
Yeah. It's been kind of cool. It's been rainy and misty, mm-hmm. a lot of overcast. I ran into a good friend recently, and, you know, as people do, they ask me, like, how's the farm season going this year? And I'm like, it's so cold and rainy and things aren't growing, blah, blah, blah. And she just sort of looked at me. She's like, farmers are always complaining about the weather. And I was like, oh, dang, she's right. Because if it was really hot and sunny, I'd be complaining about how it was so hot and sunny and we weren't getting any rain. So, you know, it's always something.
Mm-hmm.
But this year, the something is that it's been cooler and overcast and lots of that misty
Muggy. Some muggy days.
You feel that heat behind the clouds. I mean, I feel like you can sense that, man, if that just broke through, it would be hot. And that's happened sometimes where it started out really overcast, really cool, and then the sun's broken through and it's just is hot, hot sun, and then the clouds come back.
And the plants grow so much during
those brief moments of sunshine, yeah. It's, you know, what would we do if we couldn't complain about the weather?
Well,
it'd just be like a great drop in our conversation here. So I'm just trying to embrace it this year. But it does provide some challenges. And
one of the challenges I've noticed, I mean, obviously out on the farm and in many places, we're experiencing plants that are having a hard time getting going,
mm-hmm.
a little bit of a hard time getting going. But then we're also now experiencing weed explosions.
Oh, my gosh.
That we don't normally see this time of year.
Because it's been so wet and so warm.
Yeah.
So, and just like perfect germination, which is great if you're sowing carrots, you know, or something you actually want to germinate. But if you don't want your thistles to germinate like mad or everything else that's a weed, this is a year you've really got to stay on top of weeds. Usually this time of year, we would be reaching that sweet spot where if we'd really been on top of it earlier in the year, the weed pressure would be a lot reduced by now. But that is not the case this year.
Yeah, I'm definitely seeing some more maintenance in places, some more going back through and weeding, and I've noticed at the farm.
You know, and I would just encourage everybody, it's like, even though I know it's not anyone's favorite job, just really try and stay on top of those weeds, because the more that you can catch before they go to seed, the less you're going to be dealing with
breaking those seed cycles.
Yeah, that's so huge. You know, and if something has, this is another thing too that I'm seeing. Like we have a number of thistles on our farm that I'm really trying to get on top of. And once a flower, there's certain flowers that once the flowers started to form, even if you pull that plant and then just drop it on the ground,
sometimes those seeds
will still process and set seed. And so oftentimes, if it's something you really don't want, put it in a bag.
Yeah.
And
put it in a bag, throw it away, or burn it.
Yeah.
You know, our burn barrels are an option for things like that.
Yeah.
I know in my compost, I try to keep out things like morning glory also.
Yeah.
Some of the things that you know they're not going to stop.
Yeah.
In that compost pile.
Yeah. I've also I was like, we just need a little more hot, sunny weather to do this, but there's certain plants where I will, things that are runner plants. Yeah, just pull them, but then leave them to sort of desiccate and dry on the ground. And once they're really dry and brittle, they're not going to root if you throw them in a pile. But you need to make sure that they're fully dry and dead.
Yeah, or on, you know, making sure that they're on some sort of either a tarp or if you have a concrete pad or something like that, like throwing them out to desiccate like that. And that is not, don't do that with the things that are going to seed.
Yes, exactly, because then those seeds are just going to blow all over the
running place. Grasses. Mm-hmm. I could see doing that with
buttercups. Yep.
Mm-hmm. The ranuncula family, things like that could dry out. And honestly, even morning glory, I've done that. Those deeper rooted tap roots, those things that are traveling, can often have amazing amounts of trace minerals and elements that they're bringing up and can be really healthy for your compost pile if you dry them out first.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but no seeds. So stay on top of your weeds. I think that's
mulching.
Mulching.
Really thinking about mulching your pathways, mulching in your beds, and those mulches might be different things.
Mm-hmm. But like, especially like once you've weeded, if you put down mulch, that can really help. Even just like an inch of mulch can help some of those small seeds from
germinating,
just having enough access to sunlight to germinate. So it can make a huge difference.
It can. And also that mulch layer and thicker in some cases, that mulch layer can really help to keep the moisture in.
Mm-hmm.
And that is something that I've noticed a lot right now where the weather's a little unpredictable. We see it rain. We think, oh, yay.
I don't have to water.
Woo!
And yet,
you know, really getting your fingers into the soil, in your containers, and in the ground. Dig around. See how deep that water penetrated.
Because sometimes it's just on the surface. And if you actually dig down, it's still really dry underneath, which is super frustrating because it can feel like, well, we actually got rain.
Yeah.
But it didn't really reach where the roots of your plant are. And that's going to depend a little bit on your soil type. Because if you have, this is another thing too, it's like if you have a heavier clay soil, sometimes you can, like, those top couple of inches seem really dry and you're like, oh, I really got to water.
Yeah.
But if you actually went down a foot, it's still plenty wet down there. So if you water, you could be overwatering some of those plants.
So maybe forking, maybe putting a little
fork like in. Dig down a foot and just check it out. And I think that's good to have spots in your garden where are maybe kind of representative of an area. And, like, allow yourself periodically to just dig down and open up the soil a little bit and see what's going on down below and see what kind of moisture is down there. If you have a very sandy soil, you might need to water.
And often we might have different microclimates, even within our own small home garden.
Yep.
We might have an area that has more clay. We might have an area that dries out faster.
Yeah. So just pay attention to those things. Don't just assume it's like, oh, I'm just going to turn my watering system on and everything's going to be fine. So different plants are going to need different things. And, you know, just trying to pay attention.
Yeah.
That's kind of the rule of thumb. Pay attention.
And also, I mean, when those things are, we were just talking about powdery mildew before the show. And, you know, one of the promotions of that is having plants dry out. Surface watering foliage.
So not watering your foliage.
Watering
at the base of the plant.
Letting things wilt down.
Yeah, see, I feel like we're just giving some really confusing information because sometimes on a hot day, if it's a really hot day, your plants will droop.
Yeah.
And a lot of times people will freak out at that because it looks like the plant's dying. It looks so unhappy. And what's happening is the plant's just kind of pulling in and conserving.
Lowered turgor pressure.
Is that what it's called?
Turgor?
Turgor pressure. Okay, well, lowered turgor pressure. But anyway, so they're just kind of conserving their moisture. And so they do droop and they look terrible. But usually once the sun goes down, like the next morning, they look fine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so don't freak out and start pouring water on them because you might be overwatering
them at that point.
So again, it's like if your plants are doing that and it's a really, really hot sunny day, And you open up the
soil. Don't water right then.
Don't water them then. But if you dig down and there's still moisture down below, they're probably going to be okay. But also like avoiding watering the leaves of a plant.
Yeah. Also avoiding watering in the heat of the day.
Yeah.
Thinking about watering in the mornings.
Mm-hmm.
And hoping that we're not doing a lot of overhead watering.
Yeah, because we were talking about powdery mildew and overhead watering, when the leaves get really wet and especially when it's warm, that is just like, oh, paradise for powdery mildew, which is this fungal thing. It's a little white, powdery, disgusting. So if you've gardened in this area, you've experienced powdery mildew because it's just here. And it's, I mean, basically we have the ideal climate for powdery mildew. But some years it's worse than others, and I feel like, oh, this is just one of those years.
This has been one of those years.
And it's out there, and if it gets really, really bad, you need to pull that plant out.
I'm definitely removing foliage.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some things that people do, like milk sprays and some preventative things.
Yeah.
But I just kind of wing it. And
I feel like I'm growing on such a scale that, I mean, I know I could. People just, you know, do some compost tea sprays or different things like that, and I haven't really done enough like serious experimentation with that to say one way or the other if things work or not.
It's a totally different thing for a home gardener that might have
a couple
two pumpkins that they're happy to do a preventative, you know, some sort of compost tea spray or something like that,
yeah.
but.
Out there with my little backpack sprayer. How many do you want? It's like, once it gets to be over 100, you're like, oh, yeah, it's too many. But it's not. I mean, I've done some foliar feeding of them, too. So it's like, I mean, and the thing is, if it matters enough to you, take care of it. You know, try and do something. And also a good thing to do, like call the extension office, call Master Gardeners, or go stop by one of their farmers markets booth and talk to them about it and sort of see what's the latest wisdom from OSU about powdery mildew in your garden, on your plants. You know, understand that just it's going to happen, and especially a year like this, it's going to happen. So be aware of it, know what you're looking for, and have a sense of like how to, you know, just you know, cut off leaves, cut off the parts of the plant that are showing some signs of it. You don't have to take the whole plant out.
Yeah. Know that it's airborne, though, and being careful as you're working with that stuff. I know for me, certain ornamentals that are starting to get coated on leaves, I'm like, okay, you're almost done anyway.
I'm gonna cut you back.
I'm cutting you back. You're done now.
Yeah. The other thing that's been sort of an interesting frustration this year is because we've had, I mean, we've actually had some rain, not just like that misty stuff, but actual rain. And these beautiful plants that are growing and they're tall and they're lush and they're gorgeous.
Spiky, tall people plants.
And then they get soaking wet and they fall over.
Yeah.
And it's so frustrating. And, you know, I know better.
I mean, there are strategies, but there pre-strategies.
Yeah, and I did not do that on some of my plants. Yeah. And I'm just embarrassed to say some of them because I know better. But I was just like, oh, I had my support netting out and I meant to put it on. And then I was like, oh, and then it rained. And now I've got this beautiful crop of this one snapdragon that's so beautiful. But it's like it's on the ground and then the flowers are growing sideways. It's so embarrassing to admit this because I'm like, I'm supposed to be a professional doing this. But look at my, I'm trying to figure out how to incorporate them into like unusual bouquets with like the sideways flowers. You know, and at a certain point you're like, yeah, I just got to cut these off. But that is something that's really frustrating when you have these gorgeous lush plants and then they all fall on the ground and they start growing sideways and then you prop them up, but then the things are growing sideways. And
so that's something to think about. And it's really hard sometimes when we're drifting along with not very much rain and you're thinking, oh, look at these delphiniums.
They look so great.
Oh, yeah, this is great. Not like I really grow that many delphiniums, but tall spikies or even the some of the ornamental grasses.
Yeah.
Those seem to pop back up, but some of the perennials, thinking about
supports.
Very easy supports. I know when I was in England, one year I got really lucky and went to Sissinghurst really pre-season and got to see all these twigs and branches and little bits of very, you know, these were things that we were just pruning out of the garden and pre-staking
things. Preventative is always better.
Yeah, and also knowing that you don't have to go out and buy those peony cages. You can, and if you have them, that's great. I know there's many store-bought methods.
But like some twigs and string, bamboo and string.
Bamboo and string, but also when we're cutting shrubs or small trees, branches that are multi-branches in one, you know, not just one stake.
You just stick it in the ground.
You just stick it in the ground, and maybe you've got 5 or 12, you know, little branches coming off, and that can really provide a support system for a perennial coming up. Or I've even seen sweet peas in the middles of beds like that.
Oh, interesting.
Where people are using little branch structures or making teepees.
Yeah, teepees are fun too. I know one thing that I always did, I always seem to have extra tomato cages lying around, which are not in themselves very, very attractive. But I used them to help corral my dahlias back before I had so many dahlias that just became a stupid thing to try and, you know, use tomato cages for. But like if you put, as the dahlia is pretty small, if you put the tomato cage on it and the dahlia just sort of grows up and through
it. And it disappears.
It disappears because the foliage fills out and you really don't see that tomato cage. But dahlias are another one of those things where like the stems are quite big and thick. And they oftentimes have quite big flowers on them. And so when they do get wet, or sometimes even not wet, but they just get heavy, and they'll just fall over. And there's nothing so heartbreaking as having this gorgeous, huge dahlia and then like half of it's lying on the ground. So the tomato cage really was something that that was helpful to me Again, like it's hard once the dahlia is full grown. It's really hard to get a tomato cage on it. Believe me, I stupidly tried to do that a couple of times. It's like, yeah, this is not working.
It's like trying to fit into an outfit.
Yeah,
that doesn't fit.
Put on those jeans that used to be able to wear 10 years ago. That's not happening. But if you do it early on, and if you don't, and it's gone too far, just some stakes and twine.
Yeah.
You know, wooden stakes, bamboo stakes, and then just make a little cage around it.
Another thought for preventative measures in this sort of realm, pinching back, phlox, all kinds of things.
When you say pinching back.
Yes.
Explain what you mean.
Well, taking the top foliage off, going to a node farther down where there's new starts coming out on both sides, and kind of reducing the size of the plant that's going to send out two different, it's going to get a little bushier, but possibly not as tall.
Yeah, so not the one single tall stalk, but multiple smaller branching stalks.
Yeah,
yeah, we do that
plants
with flowers.
That take well to that.
Yeah, I'm finally forcing myself to do that with a lot of
my
cut
flowers.
I know, it's
hard sometimes.
It's so hard. But I think once you do it and you realize, holy cow, this actually really does produce a whole bunch more stems.
Yeah, more flowers.
Yeah, I finally did that with some amaranth this year that I'm growing for bouquets. And last year, you remember, so I grew this beautiful amaranth that it was called Coral Fountains, and it was these gorgeous, kind of coral pinky ponytails, really. It was just ridiculous plant. Long, 4 feet long.
Yeah.
And they were gorgeous but crazy weird. There was no way I could put that in a bouquet. And then finally reading about it, going, oh, you're supposed to pinch that one. So you pinch it out when it's maybe, a foot tall, and it's just really starting to take off, and then you have to cut it back to half its size, and it was hard.
It's terrible. In the long run, though.
But then they look beautiful.
Yeah, we know this from basil. That's a thing that we do with basil.
Yeah.
There's many plants that we do that with. But looking at some of the perennials in your garden, and say you have a patch of phlox that's 3 feet wide, you don't have to pinch out the whole thing.
Yeah.
You could do a little creative.
Selective,
I'm going to have some taller ones at the back, and I'm going to bring down some of the front. But that can be a preventative measure from having your tall, tall stalk just flop in the rain.
Yeah. It's hard these years. I don't think any of us ever really, I feel like I go into every summer just not knowing what's really going to happen. And so, this could have been one of those years where I just really, really carefully staked anything, and then it was just so hot and dry that it didn't matter, But it's always good to be thinking about these things, but then also have, some things in your back pocket, some tricks to, deal with. When we do get the summer rain and things do fall over, what do you
bouquets.
Do? You make bouquets.
You make a lot of bouquets.
Make a lot of jam.
Yeah,
I know.
Bringing flowers to friends. One last note on the rain part of this. Remembering that we still need to slug bait some. I went out in my home garden yesterday and saw slugs on poppies. And I thought, oh my gosh. And iron phosphate, that's our, my slug bait of choice. Staying away from those real poisonous ones that can be poisonous to pets and wildlife. But the iron phosphate pellets are very effective. And just kind of keeping that in mind. It seems like we don't have to do that right now. But
I gotta
we
go.
Do.
I gotta do another big round of that. I know, it's crazy. And I was thinking about, you think about different years and what they bring to you. On the one hand, it's cool, wet weather. I'm not having nearly the flea beetle explosion that I've had in years past, which is awesome.
But you've also taken some preventative measures.
We have taken preventative measures, but even so,
it's
nothing like what it's been in years past because they don't like cool, wet weather. But boy, I have a lot more slugs this time of year, which normally I'm just I could put out slugs. So it's always a trade-off. And I think that's maybe I'm just older and wiser. I'm definitely older, but wiser. But it's that just accepting that it's always going to be something. So just, take a deep breath.
That's part of the process. And not to take it too seriously. Yeah. I know for you, your scale is different.
Yeah,
but in the home garden, just to enjoy. Yeah. I had a moment where I thought, that slug crawling all over that poppy is kind of beautiful, and now you're gonna take a trip.
I know. I think the other thing too is that sometimes the weather can precipitate needing to jumpstart start harvesting at times when maybe you're not ready for it yet. And that can happen with extreme heat, or it can happen with rain. Yeah. Like sometimes you have extreme heat and your crops start bolting, whatever you're growing, like whether it's your peas or something like that, and you just got to go pick a whole bunch of stuff. And, you know, I know for me yesterday, I was like deep into the raspberries, just desperately trying to do a rescue because they were so wet. It's like warm, wet weather is so terrible for ripe raspberries. So just trying to get that picked and then realizing, like, I just got to make jam because, yes, you know.
So
they were halfway to jam by the time I got them picked. It was really delicious, and I was soaking wet by the end of it. But it was. But those are just sometimes the things that you have to do. And you could always freeze them until you're ready to make jam.
Yeah.
So it doesn't have to happen right in that moment.
Good strategy.
Although I did stay up till 1 in the morning making jam.
So tell me about what kind of jam are you making, tea?
Well, last night, I actually made a rhubarb raspberry jam, which, because I had a lot of rhubarb, because again, it's been so cool and wet, that crop has lasted a lot longer. And I tend to not like super, super sweet jams. I like something that could like swing a little bit more to the savory.
Mm-hmm.
So I hadn't made this one before, but I thought I would try it. And it's actually really good. It's a little tangy. Tangy and sweet. It's really good. It's beautiful, beautiful color. Lots of raspberries, you know, it's like kind of equal parts raspberry and rhubarb. It's good.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, again, it's like just, you know, being prepared to kind of, what am I going to do with all this stuff?
And thinking about that, thinking about our processing, thinking about harvesting our lavender.
Yeah, the lavender, oof. It's just started to bloom and it looks so beautiful, and then all got
maybe let it dry out today. We're going to dry out today. Mm-hmm,
yeah.
It's going to get sunny.
And that's something to think about too, when things get wet.
Yeah.
And this is hard because you don't always have the option.
Yeah.
But, you know, for something like lavender, if you want to dry it, if you have a beautiful big lavender bush and you want to dry your lavender, but it's been raining, let it dry out. Or if you have to pick it, then put it like in a bucket where all the stems are like leaning outwards and let it air dry before you put it into a bunch. Because trust me, if you bunch it and the flowers are still wet at all, you're going to basically just dry a bunch of mold.
Yeah. And honestly, it's much better to wait for them to dry on plant.
Harvesting,
then you're really making bunches.
In the warm part of the day, you want to wait until like the morning dew.
Mm-hmm.
And this is sort of true for a lot of herbs and flowers if you're cutting them to dry. Late morning is oftentimes the best. Late morning on a sunny day.
Yeah.
The dew, the morning mist has kind of dried off them. The warmth brings out their oils and the fragrance, and that's a really great time to cut them and dry them. I'm hoping to harvest our catnip this week if it dries out.
Yeah.
Harvest a bunch of lavender, hopefully.
Hang them to dry.
I know. I mean, another heartbreaker for me this week is our sweet peas. It's just, they don't like this weather. And it's just like harvesting a whole bunch of wet tissue paper.
Yeah.
You know, so just having to go through and like toss.
Okay,
so
your compost.
Yep, compost.
Pretty compost.
There's more coming along. Again, it's cooler, so there's more buds forming. But it is, there's some things where it's just not rescuable.
Yeah, and staying on top of that deadheading. Mm-hmm. Sometimes, like you're saying, when you're looking at these tissue paper flowers, and you're thinking, I can't make any bouquets out of that.
Yeah. But especially with something like sweet peas, if you have sweet peas growing in your garden, the more you deadhead them, the more they will grow. And if you let them go to seed, they're like, okay, we're done.
Yep.
And they'll stop producing. And so you have to stay on top of keeping them deadheaded. So even though I really don't want to go down that row and cut off all that, but it's very fragrant.
It's
fragrant wet tissue paper. So that's something. It's always something.
It is always something, but knowing that that's part of the process.
Mm-hmm.
And taking those little downs with the amazing ups that we get in the garden and out in nature.
I feel like for gardeners and for farmers, you know, I mean, part of it is like we are choosing to try and work with nature. And you have to accept that nature is in control. Ultimately, you are not in control. Nature's absolutely got the final word. And so it's just kind of trying to roll with it, trying to work with what you get. It's always going to be something. It gives us something to complain about and something to chat about, stories to tell. So it's a positive. And, you know, I think that's part of the joy of it, too, I think, is the challenge each year brings you. It's not the same thing as last year.
And some of that problem solving, you come up with things like, I'm going to make jam right now.
Yeah.
Oh, I got some wet raspberries.
It's pretty good jam. You know, got to pick the other side today, figure out something else to do with it.
Yeah.
You know, and then hopefully what will happen is that then the berries that are not quite ripe yet will not get infected with the mold that would happen if I left those wet berries on the vines. And that's where it's like that preventative stuff. It's worth it to go out and take care of those things, even if you're not necessarily benefiting from it in the way that you thought you were going to.
Yeah, the preventative things, going out, the slug baits, the staking. Oh, we're talking about preventative.
Preventative things.
And maintenance in the garden.
Yeah.
These things that...
That's kind of what this time of year is about. I feel
like it's just... We're coasting a little.
I'm not coasting.
Yeah.
I want to take a nap.
Yeah. As far as
November, they'll be napping in November.
As far as fresh planting. But, I mean, there are things we can still plant this time
Of
year.
But... very quickly before we wrap up, because we were worrying, like, what are we going to talk about today? And here we are again, like, oh, my God, I've got so many more things to say.
Like, oh, my gosh.
But one more thing I really want to say is, and this is like I always feel like people get kind of upset with you when you say the F word, but fall. Thinking about fall. And I don't mean that in a bad way, but this is a time when you can be sowing seeds or putting in transplants for fall crops and looking ahead. And so there are lots of really lovely fall crops that will grow here, especially if, fingers crossed, we get a reasonably decent fall as compensation for this pretty terrible summer. So, you know, lots of leafy greens, cabbages, cauliflower does really well in the fall, broccoli, lettuce all year long, spinaches can do well. You know, just different kinds of fall crops or things that you're thinking about overwintering. Maybe you're thinking about growing garlic this year. Think about where that bed's going to go. Yeah. Maybe start prepping it now. Yeah. You know, just thinking about fall.
Mounding your potato.
Yeah, just do some of that stuff.
Yeah.
Fall. It's not a bad word.
Mm-mm.
But summer, let's hope for a little more summer first.
Yeah, we're going to have a long summer, I can tell.
I'm going to hold you to that. Okay, we're basically out of time. Thank you for joining us. Thanks for being along this journey with us. It's always an adventure.
It is. And
hopefully it's a delicious and beautiful adventure more often than it's covered with powdery mildew.
Yes, definitely.
I hope.
Out into the gardens and
absolutely
observe what's happening and take some joy out there.
Stake your plants.
Yeah.
We'll talk to you next time.
Cheers.
Bye. Thanks, Dylan.